This weekend starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Social media can do better. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
In the wake of crimes tied to sites like Facebook and YouTube, tech analyst Rob Enderle says tech firms should be doing more to find solutions to today's problems.
Tired of standing in line to pay? Why the checkout line may soon be more efficient.
Technology has changed a lot of traditions at stock exchanges, but one filthy tradition remains.
And how the recent scandals in Hollywood, corporate offices, and Capitol Hill are impacting the writing and editing of romance novels.
We have romance novels where the women are having a lot more say in what's going to happen in office romances. This is all sort of following the fall and winter and the sexual harassment scandals.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gamerman on how office romance is changing in today's novels. She's here later in the hour. The shooting incident that took place recently at YouTube had less to do with guns than with the failure of the police to act on information in a timely way, and the inability of social media to be anything but part of the problem. In both the Parkland and YouTube events, social media seemed to help inflame the attackers, or at least did nothing to reduce their anger or eliminate the threats. Tech analyst Rob Enderle of the Enderle Group says technology can do better. Rob, how do you see it?
Well, so the difficulty with Facebook right now is they're perceived as a problem. In fact, Recode just did a survey, and it turns out 56% of the folks surveyed indicate they don't trust Facebook. And the next in line in terms of distrust is Google at 5%. So you drop from 56% to 5%.
Wow.
Which, of course, means that if you're advertising on anything, you probably don't want to advertise on Facebook because that kind of negativity would translate over to the ad. So this is a serious problem for Facebook. So you mentioned the two shootings. In both of the shootings, there were social media indications that there was a problem that was upcoming, but that wasn't really discovered until after the shooting had occurred. In some cases, it had been reported, but clearly the authorities, the local authorities, hadn't taken the problem seriously, and the end result was shooting went on unabated. Facebook has the capability, as they've now demonstrated, to potentially swing an election, so that If they've got that kind of capability to change minds, to motivate people, they can also reduce the animosity and violence. When people are trending towards violence, they could use a tool that I ran into the same week I was writing this called Darwin Ecosystems that works with IBM Watson. And and that tool can not only identify the threat based on tone that somebody is trending towards violence, but it could also provide pointers to articles, news items, or whatever that would show consequences, that would convey empathy, that would dial the person back from their violent goals. Not to mention, of course, once you identify it, you could pass it over to law enforcement. Law enforcement could step in and mitigate, as opposed to just coming in after the fact. So the end result is Facebook, rather than just being a problem, could become a solution. And if they use the analytics to improve the overall experience of the user, maybe they could not only restore trust, but make us all a heck of a lot safer.
Mm. This Darwin Ecosystems, and this is artificial intelligence that could potentially not only identify a problem person or problem postings, but also step in and walk a person back?
Yeah, it's an AI. So it basically it uses what it learns to not only identify a person's change in personality, but the same kind of AI can be used to provide that person, much like they're currently. I mean, if you think about it, what Cambridge Analytics did was take what they knew about somebody, give them news to either get them not to vote if they were Democratic or get them motivated to vote if they were Republican. That's changing a person's behavior. you can change a person's behavior with regard to how they're voting. You can change a person's behavior with regard to how they're feeling with regard to violence. And so you could actually use it to help guide somebody that was suicidal towards help, or just simply make them feel better. Somebody that's just, you know, depressed, drive them away from depression. It could be, I mean, it could be a powerful way to make the tool much more than just a way to manipulate you. And as I say, with the vast majority of us, according to that Recode survey, not trusting the platform, at the very least, they need to do brand recovery, because at some point, those advertisers are going to flee once they realize that people don't trust the brand.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece entitled "Turning Social Media from a Problem into a Solution." All right, so this Darwin ecosystems, or perhaps artificial intelligence more broadly, yeah, then, spot something, let's say, on Facebook that seems disturbing. What could it do? Like, actually throw a pop-up ad out there for, like, an emotional support group?
Could do that. I mean, the thing is right now, the way Facebook's been dealing with this is that it identifies somebody that either is on the one side they don't want to vote, or on the side that they want to vote. What they're doing was giving them news items, in the case of Democrats not voting, news items getting you to distrust Hillary Clinton. In the case of Republicans, news items suggesting that Hillary Clinton was going to take away their guns or something along those lines. This would be that same kind of thing. It'd be in line. It would just give you news items about people that had, if say you were depressed, news items about what people had done to overcome depression. If you're talking about somebody that's becoming violent, showcase the repercussions to the individuals that have been violent. In other words, give them stories that don't hold up the shooters as, well, I don't want to use the word heroes, but some of the stories tend to present these people in far more favorable light than I would have thought.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the tech advisory firm called the Enderle Group. It's 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Drivers who routinely don't pay tolls in Pennsylvania could be convicted of a felony. The Keystone State's Turnpike Commission has begun to file criminal charges against motorists. More from This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
When it comes to toll road scofflaws, there's a new approach afoot, branding them as felons. Scott Calvert of the Wall Street Journal has more on what's happening around the country and joins us now. Scott, what's happening in Pennsylvania?
Sure. Well, I think at first it might be good just to step back for a quick second and think about how we pay tolls. Like, historically, we would you drive up to the toll booth, you give the toll operator some cash, and you drive on, and then they introduce, you know, these baskets where you could toss in quarters. But for the last, you know, almost 30 years now, there has been this move toward electronic tolling, easy pass lanes where you just drive through and you've got a transponder in your car and that's how you pay the toll. And more now, you also have options in a lot of places where you just drive through and they take a picture of your license plate and you get a bill in the mail and you pay your toll that way. But the problem with this approach is it makes it sort of easier for people to not pay. You can either blow through an easy pass lane without a transponder, or if you get something in the mail, you can ignore it and not pay it. And so a lot of toll agencies are sort of wrestling with how they can make sure they get paid. And traditionally, the way toll agencies deal with this is sort of administratively, or maybe on the civil side, where perhaps your vehicle registration won't get renewed or it'll be suspended. Maybe you can actually have your driver's license suspended, that sort of thing. And in Pennsylvania, what the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission is doing is sort of ratcheting it up, and they have begun. They realized they could charge people with a felony crime, theft of services, and that's what they have started to do for what they consider egregious scofflaws, people who owe at least $2,000 in unpaid tolls and associated fines.
We're speaking with Scott Calvert of the Wall Street Journal. Scott, how important are tolls to state coffers?
Well, I mean, they're very important for these for the toll agencies or the turnpike authorities. I mean, they need this money to maintain the road network. They use that money to pay the bonds from the folks that they borrowed money from. So it's critically important. It's a vital source of revenue. And it's worth pointing out that, you know, the vast majority of people do pay their tolls. Like in Pennsylvania, they say it's, you know, 99% plus. But when you're talking about more than $1 billion in annual revenue, even that fraction of a percent will add up to, you know, many millions of dollars.
Scott, I thought your story had an interesting take on what Illinois does. Can you explain that?
Sure. Well, yeah, so some places like Illinois do the name and shame approach. And every quarter they publish a list of what they call super scoff laws. And this is anybody who owes at least $1,000 to the Illinois tollway. And so I was checking one of the recent versions of it had 469 names, and they owed anywhere from, you know, just over $1,000 all the way up to around $890,000. And a lot of these appear to be trucking firms of one sort or another. And yeah, clearly their hope is that by putting this out publicly, people will feel some sense of shame, perhaps, and take steps to pay that down so the next time the list gets published, they're not on it.
Is impounding vehicles really the only way to stop some of these people?
Well, you know, one of the points that someone I was talking to made was that, you know, if you suspend someone's registration, that's all well and good. But, of course, you know, the car will still work, and people drive all the time on suspended registrations. So, you know, you can't stop people from driving in that sense. There is some impounding that happens. In New York City, the MTA, Bridge and Tunnel Police, and State Police, they use these license plate readers that, you know, can tell them, oh, this person, you know, has X amount in outstanding toll violations. And they have been stopping people. And what they do in those cases is they do impound the vehicle and give a summons to the driver. So that's certainly, you know, one step you can take. In Pennsylvania, you know, they're taking a different approach, and there they really want people to see this as sort of a deterrent, that, you know, nobody wants a felony on their record, right? Because there are all sorts of consequences that flow from that. So their real hope is that people will say, geez, I would rather pay up, or, you know, even better, just pay my toll every time I drive through, rather than face the possibility of being charged with a felony.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Scott Calvert. 21 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Shoppers who are sick of long lines at checkout may get some relief soon. Credit card companies won't require customers to provide a signature at checkout when they use those EMV or chip credit cards starting this month. MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna says eliminating signatures is a positive development for the retailer and the consumer. Maria, explain.
So this month, pretty much all the major credit card companies, including American Express, Discover, and Visa, won't actually require customers to provide a signature at the checkout anymore. So, you know, you're using your EMV card, your Trip credit card, starting in April, you won't be required by those companies to sign a receipt anymore.
Okay. And the reason behind this is what?
So over time, technology has kind of gotten better. You know, we hope. Obviously, we've seen breaches at various retailers, but, you know, at least when it comes to actually physical checkout at a store, you know, looking at someone's signature is no longer a great way to verify their identity. You know, a long time ago, when people were actually closely looking at those signatures, it might have been more important, but now, you know, the banks do a good job of using artificial intelligence and tracking your spending over time to try to figure out fraud. So their approach is much more about that and much less about the sort of, you know, old-fashioned way of looking at a piece of paper and deciding if your signature is legit or not.
Mm. Is it up to the individual merchant to determine, by the way, if in fact you even enter a PIN? I think it, like, I want to say a fast food joint recently, I, you know, put in the chip card and didn't have to do anything else besides that.
Yeah.
You know, no PIN,
yeah,
or signature.
Yeah, basically the major credit card companies that you would think of, you know, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express, they all work together to decide what their standards are for merchants to be allowed to process payments. And so obviously merchants want to accept as many forms of credit cards as they can to hopefully get as much business as they can. So the card companies kind of band together to set those standards. And then the merchants have to basically adhere to that if they want to accept those cards.
All right, so we can hopefully assume more efficiency and better security with this change?
Yes, I hope so. I mean, it's mostly been thought of as a convenience thing. You know, abroad, it's not as common to ever have required a signature. You know, chip and PIN is common in the UK. So the US is actually kind of behind on still requiring a physical signature. And, you know, merchants are trying to do anything they can to make shopping easier, especially when so much of what people are purchasing is now online or through apps. So, you know, anything to make the physical brick and mortar experience faster and smoother is something that they're looking into. So it's mostly something about convenience right now.
We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna. She's written a piece entitled, "Here's One Positive Change Happening at the Checkout Line." So the lack of signatures now, though, is not something you should expect to happen overnight, right? Because a lot of this depends on merchants themselves.
Yes, and that's a big challenge across payments in general. You know, whenever a new sort of payment, maybe a mobile payment comes out, it's kind of a challenge for merchants to switch because all of that technology that they have in the store has to actually be revamped. So, you know, it might take a while for them to actually get on board with this. And, you know, they could still require it if they wanted to. It's just that the credit card companies don't. So we may see a sort of slow rollout. And even though technically you don't have to sign, you know, merchants might take a bit to actually get on board with it.
Thanks, Maria. That is MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna, based in New York. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username at Gordon Deal. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. If you want the absolute best shirts around, you have to go to CT Shirts. I want you to try them because once you do, you'll never go back to some random shirt off the shelf of a department store. And CT Shirts come in custom sizes, so you're not messing with ill-fitted sleeve lengths or neck sizes. It's time to step up your game and look your best, so I got you a special CT Shirts deal. 3 CT Shirts for $99. CT Shirts use the softest, most exquisite fabrics ever. Work or casual, tie or no tie, tuck or untucked, when you're wearing a CT shirt, you'll look your best. Here's the deal. 1 CT shirt normally costs $100, but right now, you get 3 shirts for just $99. That's 60% off. Go to ctshirts.com/deal. And CT Shirts come with free delivery, a 6-month quality guarantee, and free returns. If you hurry, $99 gets you 3 amazing CT shirts. ctshirts.com/deal. That's ctshirts.com/deal.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, struggling movie theaters go upscale to survive. Also, romance novels adapt to sexual harassment scandals, and Chicago's traders remain dedicated to littering. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. As Facebook sends its promised updates, telling users whether or not they were one of the 87 million whose personal data may have been scraped by Cambridge Analytica to create and position online political ads, some people won't even need to look. They're certain none of their information was sold because they're sure there was no information of theirs out there to sell. There are two kinds of people in the world, it seems, these days, right? Those who embrace social media and those who shun it. More from Lisa Belkin, chief national correspondent at Yahoo News. Lisa, who are the people who shun it?
So I thought that, okay, it's going to be, you know, really old end of the spectrum who just can't be bothered or can't learn or can't deal with it. And then maybe the younger end of the spectrum for whom something like Facebook is no longer cool. You know, they had completely moved past it. But I didn't. I found it all along the ages, socioeconomic. I mean, there were people who just have never really been comfortable. Now, their reasons varied. So some of them, it was truly a fear of exactly what we've seen. The idea that someone out there is taking this information and I don't know where it's going and I just don't like that. A lot of them, it was just the more amorphous, gauzy feeling that I don't like what this is doing to me, to society. One woman said they've co-opted the word friends, and I just find that insulting. To use the word friends the way Facebook in particular is using it, well, that's just a diss to my real friends and real friendship.
That was interesting, yeah.
There was one young woman, a high school senior, all her friends are on all of these, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It was not just Facebook that we were talking about. And she'd rather talk to them in person. She'd rather hold a book in her hand. It's a sensory experience for her. She just doesn't understand why everyone around her is staring at their phones, which is what I expect people my age to be saying about people her age, but she was saying it about them.
We're speaking with Lisa Belkin, Chief National Correspondent at Yahoo News. She's written a piece about the revenge of the face blockers, these folks who shun social media and are glad they've done so in the wake of scandals like the Cambridge Analytica. How about the woman who wouldn't even identify herself to you? It was the office worker, right? She wouldn't even give her name.
She started out by saying, you know, hi, I don't even want to be talking to you. I'm not even sure I want to be talking to you. This is such an anathema, all of it, that I don't even want to talk about it.
Wow.
And yet she was extraordinarily well-spoken about it once we started talking. But she actually had a bad experience when she signed on to Facebook, mostly for business reasons, which a lot of people did. A lot of people who didn't use it socially did have business pages because you kind of can't avoid it.
Yeah.
But she signed on. And the first person to friend her, to just pop up as a friend, was someone who had sexually harassed her at a previous job. And then the next person right after that was a woman who just more or less was in her face at another job. And this, I won't say stalking her, but constantly following her around and badgering her with questions. And these were two people who she had hoped to leave behind when she left these jobs, and these were the two people who had popped up, and she just said, no more, I'm done, this is not for me, and she really has not gone back.
Thanks, Lisa. Lisa Belkin, Chief National Correspondent at Yahoo News. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. Theater attendance last year fell to its lowest level since 1995, a crisis propelled by the rise of streaming. That is spurring the industry's biggest changes since the multiplex building boom of the 90s. Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel says today, exhibitors are tearing out seats and replacing them with luxury recliners, fitting fewer overall seats, but creating steadier revenue at higher prices. Eric, what's trending?
This is actually the latest chapter for movie theaters. We had, obviously the single screen houses that started the trend, and now we have multiplexes still in some parts of the country with hundreds of seats in an auditorium. Now we're seeing a lot of those theaters tear those seats out and install big luxury recliners. They reduced the seating capacity of the auditorium by 2/3, but what they have found is that it's easier to get people off the couch if they can replicate their couch in the auditorium and sort of make movie going a more luxurious experience.
Mm. All right, so how luxurious?
It can get pretty pretty high end. I mean, there are some chains, you know, that are charging up to $30 a ticket, and you not only have this, you know, big lazy boy type seat in the auditorium, but you can also have food and alcohol served to you during the show. Theater chain that I write about, IPIC, they even give logoed blankets to members during the movie. So it's really like watching a movie at grandma's house sometimes. But other chains like AMC or Regal that operate in all kinds of neighborhoods, even they are finding that people want to spend a couple extra dollars if it means they get the plusher seats, and then they can also order more than just popcorn and soda for their concession stands.
Go back to that blanket. Is it like an airplane? You use it and then you give it back and they wash it, hopefully?
No, I think it's for members only.
Oh,
so I think you might have a personalized blanket if you go to the same theater over and over again.
How about that? Wow. There was a picture in your story, and I think you referenced it, with like it was like 5 feet across, like a love seat with like a surround sound. It was almost like a cubicle in first class on a plane or something.
That's a good analogy. It really does seem like a lot of these places, even if it does mean reducing their seating capacity, are not only giving people a ton of room, but also in some cases, the seats have their own kind of like listening pods so that you get a more personalized sound experience. Really what this is all about is trying to get people out of their home theaters. And even if you don't have a real home theater, you know, the surround sound that you can install, the big screen TV you can get, and the big budget movies you can watch on Netflix replicate that experience quite well in the home. So a lot of these theaters are trying to, they really need to offer something a little bit above and beyond if they want to keep attendance at least flat. I mean, attendance has been going down quite a bit, and they're trying to at least keep it where it is.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal film industry reporter Eric Schwartzel about his piece about how struggling movie theaters are going upscale in order to survive. So for those who are saying that they're going to the movies again, what do they find is the biggest selling point? Is it the booze or the better food or these large like Lazy Boy chairs?
Anecdotally, I can tell you, I think it's really always been the chairs. I hear about the chairs a lot. A lot of people have told me that they won't go to a theater without the recliners anymore. In much the same way that a lot of people have really taken to advanced seating, you know, being able to pick your seat in the theater. A lot of people say, oh, I won't go to the movies unless I can pick my seat. I'm also hearing from a lot of consumers that they won't go to the movies unless they get one of these big recliner auditoriums.
Thanks, Eric. It's Wall Street Journal film industry reporter Eric Schwartzel. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Weekend, hey, glad you're with us. Last fall, amid the sexual harassment scandals that toppled a list of influential men, romance novelists began to reevaluate the appeal of the fling in the corner office. Some authors of office romances say they've become more vigilant as they make sure their happily ever afters comply with good workplace behavior. As Wall Street Journal arts reporter Ellen Gammerman says, time's up for fictional executives who make the company look bad. Ellen, what do we have?
Well, we have romance novels where the women are having a lot more say in what's going to happen in office romances. This is all sort of following the fall and winter and the sexual harassment scandals that we've seen in real life. And now novelists are starting to think about, especially in office romances, how they want their heroes and heroines to behave.
Wow, I would have never guessed that novelists care about that.
Well, most of these novelists are women, and most of the readers are women, okay. So they are and have been very aware of issues like sexual harassment in the workplace. And so in this case, you know, they're kind of writing their dream scenario for what a love affair in the office would look like, which includes men who really want to make sure everyone knows they respect women.
Wow. So who's writing what? Because I know you mentioned a number of authors who've made adjustments or changes.
Yeah. We have the author of Pregnant by the CEO. She is a longtime romance novelist. Her new novel, Reunion with Benefits, has a moment where the hero says, he sort of in his mind scolds another male coworker for kind of giving a wolfish look at a woman who's in a, you know, bending over a file, and he says, you know, nothing about that look was professional or appropriate. So he's this is kind of typical for what we're seeing in this author. Helen K. Diamond had written the scene differently. And then when she was editing the book, she kind of had the Harvey Weinstein scandal and the, you know, ensuing scandals in her mind. And so she went back and rewrote the dialogue for her hero.
No kidding. Is this stuff believable then?
Well, is it ever? I mean,
okay.
Some of this stuff is, you know, it's escapist fiction. And, you know, it's up to the reader whether or not it's believable. There's a lot of paranormal romance. There's historical romance. There's, I think readers are willing to suspend their disbelief for, you know, fans of romance fiction are just, you know, they love the authors they read, and they actually kind of enjoy when they can see some elements of current events in the books.
Thanks, Ellen. Wall Street Journal arts reporter Ellen Gamerman. It is 7 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. By the way, to hear a podcast of our weekday program, please visit our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. Veterans of Chicago's trading exchanges have watched trade slow to a trickle in the pits, where they jostle to buy and sell contracts for cattle, wheat, and interest rates. Many of the quirks of doing business there have faded too. Electronic trading has led to the closure of formerly paper-strewn trading floors around the world. But the Wall Street Journal says amid all the change, they aren't tossing out the practice of indiscriminately tossing things out. As more trading moves online, the trash is a tangible testament to their continued presence in the pits. Broker's assistant Jeff Coleman, for example, rummaged through his pockets recently and discarded the contents on the floor, scribble-covered notepaper, McDonald's receipts, cough drop wrappers floated down to his feet like a tiny ticker tape parade. Brad Litsky, a clerk, said peers got him accustomed to doing it years ago. Now he worries he couldn't shake the bad habit. He says it would be weird, for example, working at an office because he'd just be throwing his papers on the ground. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.com. org. FMLA, FLSA, ACA, EEOC. It's harder than ever for businesses to keep up with today's evolving alphabet soup of regulations. What's a company to do? Kronos. With Kronos, you can minimize compliance risk and track HR policies, making sure they are applied consistently and fairly. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/compliance. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.